Coming up on New York Now, the countdown to the end of the legislative session is on.
It becomes a broader spectacle than it would have been otherwise if you either just didn't meet in the first place or if you met on a regular basis.
And we'll sit down with one of the Republican candidates for New York City mayor, Assemblywoman Nicole Malliotakis.
There are a lot of quality of life issues that my constituents in Staten Island and Brooklyn are very upset about, and traveling around the city, other communities have the same concerns about traffic, about transportation, about the homeless crisis, about quality of life crimes not being targeted anymore.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan. We have just 3 scheduled days of session left in Albany. I say scheduled because we've seen in years past lawmakers have had to stick around a little longer to finish business at the Capitol. Any chance that happens this year? Perhaps our reporters' roundtable can answer that question. Let's send it on over to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, who moderates today's discussion.
With a week to go until the end of session, there's nobody better to make sense of it at the Reporters' Roundtable than Mike Gormley from Newsday and Matt Hamilton from my own paper, the Times Union. All right, what will happen at the Capitol in the final 5 days of the legislative session? One thing that they have to get done is pass mayoral control, the extension of mayoral control in New York City. What is going to be the ask, particularly from the state Senate, to get that done?
Well, you say they have to get it done, but they don't have to do anything necessarily. Mayoral control lapses on June 30th, but at this point, all sides are dug in with a week left to negotiate, and it kind of seems like there's a stalemate. Is it going to be the Senate gets the charter school provisions that it wants? Or, the Assembly has tied mayoral control to all these different tax extenders. And then you had the governor that went on TV yesterday and said, basically, do I foresee the Senate, wanting to do mayoral control enough? No, it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen. So it's a classic end of session standoff, and we'll see who blinks first at this point. But
no, Matt's absolutely right. That's the surprise from inside Albany, is that the Assembly as well has talked about not doing mayoral control. It's kind of bravado at this point.
It's a game of chicken.
It's a game of chicken. It's unlikely, given that Mayor de Blasio is running for re-election too. It adds another element to it. But there are large groups in each house that are opposed to mayoral control, at least the way it's going now. But watch for the classic Albany end of session deal. I mean, this is still kind of a long shot because there's so much politics involved in this. But look for, as Matt said, charter schools possibly coming in to mayoral control, but not in the bill itself, which might satisfy the Assembly. Look for the Assembly trying to also get the Child Victims Act, which the Republican senators have been opposed to, but which could possibly find a compromise in there. So we've got a whole bunch of other bills that could come together.
Well, and the other thing that I would say watch for is, does Mayor de Blasio actually show up at the Capitol in the final day of session? I mean, the Senate has always wanted him to jump through more hoops and call us and come talk to us, and you know, he's been kind of resistant to that kind of stuff. He hasn't wanted to come kiss the ring in Albany. Does he show up and do what the Senate wants him to do? And is it too late? You know, does the Senate say, okay, you came, but you should have done this 6 months ago? You know, why are you here now?
They've been hazing him for weeks over provisions within the current mayoral control law that require his office to submit budget figures, and they've said, well, yes, you've given us budget documents, but they haven't been in the form in which the statute requires. And I think the mayor would probably say, oh, come on, are we playing Simon Says here? But that's an interesting idea. Do you think the odds are that he might show up?
I don't know. I mean, some of his aides were at the Capitol yesterday. And certainly his government affairs team has been, in the halls lobbying senators and assembly members hard. So we'll see if he actually shows up. But, it's a question of, is it too little too late, or could it at least not hurt if he showed up?
Mike mentioned the Child Victims Act. Let's unpack that a little. This is a law that would extend the statute of limitations grant additional options to those who have allegedly been victims of child predators. They would be able to bring civil suits later. The Assembly passed its version of the bill last week. The governor this week introduced a bill that is very similar, if not identical, to that Assembly bill. The action, the question mark, seems now to be hanging over the Senate, correct?
Yes. When a governor introduces his own bill, that can either mean one of two things. One, that there's added pressure to come up with some kind of a compromise, or it could just be a governor covering his own butt. That has happened before with many governors. This one seems to have helped momentum on the case. There's really one provision that's sticking with the Senate Republicans. They don't like the look-back provision in the Assembly and in the governor's bill. The look-back allows victims of child sexual abuse to go back for many years, even decades, to try to get civil cases against their accusers. Now, the other side of that is that the Catholic Church and the Senate say, you know, if you go back a lot of years on these cases, evidence that would exonerate innocent people could be lost, that it's unfair. So, again, we see an area of potential compromise on this. And if this comes through, this would be a big surprise. This could be their big headline for the end of the session.
Well, and in terms of an area of compromise, the Senate IDC has its own bill sponsored by Jeff Klein that would, in this one-year window where you can look back on old cases, there would be, I guess, like a panel that would be set up that would review whether these cases could proceed forward. And Jeff Klein has billed that as the compromise bill. Rather than just a one-year window where anyone can bring a case, you would have this independent commission that would decide whether these cases are appropriate or not. So, I mean, we'll see if that starts to move in the final weeks. But at this point, yes. I mean, everyone has. It's just like mayoral control, just like charter schools, whatever. It's everyone has their trench dug, and let's see who starts to cross over into no man's land.
One thing that has been checked off the legislative bucket list for the 2017 session is an actual meeting of the Senate Ethics Committee after what we all calculate to be at very least 8 years that fine body has actually met. They met on Thursday morning, and what happened?
They had a very unaggressive agenda, and it lived right up to it. They didn't.
they met that chuck, Mark.
The public may have said, "Well, you could talk about these stipends for leadership positions, which is a controversy now of who they're going to. You could talk about any number of ethics issues, and none of those are on the agenda. It was really some proactive stuff, which I don't want to downplay it completely because proactive ethics guidance is very important." But it's not what you would expect from the first meeting in 8 years.
Well, and even if they didn't want to talk about Lulus, they still had to talk about Lulus because the Senate Democrats on the committee brought it up immediately, and they tried to bring forward a motion to look at it and discuss it or whatever. And they had the Senate Republicans had to admit, no, we can't talk about this because this is something that's the word used was under litigation, and then that word was taken back, and you know, at least being looked at by authorities. But they had to admit that that's happening. So, at the end of the day, even if you didn't want to talk about it, you still went out there and you put yourself in a position where you had no choice but to talk about it. And so it was tactically, it was a tough move to make because, I mean, you knew that Mike Gianaris, the deputy leader of the Senate Democratic Conference, was going to come in and was going to hit you over the head with this. And you knew it was going to happen, and yet you couldn't stop it.
There was a wonderful moment where Mike Gianaris proposed essentially making the provision of Lulus strictly according to statute. In other words, you couldn't sort of shift one position's Lulu to a vice chairmanship, which is the big problem that is apparently now under inquiry or investigation, depending on how you want to look at it. And Elaine Phillips, the Republican chair, said, oh, well, that unfortunately, you have to have that in writing. And Gianaris immediately pulled out a paper copy of the proposal, which then got a 4-4 vote on the question of tabling it with the support of David Carlucci of the IDC, who then had to take it back, who said, whoops, I made a mistake.
Right. I think overall, like, Casey, you have been very interested in the Senate Ethics Committee for a long time. That's been a personal thing of yours, and it's been interesting. But I don't know how many people, in Albany, reporters and then the public have paid attention to this committee, the fact that it hasn't met. And then when you have a public meeting and you put it out there, there's going to be a public meeting, and you give the time for the Democrats to say, hey, everyone come to this meeting and look what we're going to do, you get the New York Times who shows up, you get the Times Union who shows up, you get local television affiliates who show up, and it becomes a broader spectacle than it would have been otherwise if you either just didn't meet in the first place, or if you met on a regular basis and you didn't make it a spectacle by avoiding meeting altogether for all these years.
The big news of the week, I think it's fair to say, out of D.C., particularly out of Alexandria, Virginia, the terrible shooting at the practice for this congressional baseball game. Representative Chris Collins from out in western New York said it's time for us to tone down our rhetoric, and he included himself in that circle of people.
Many did on both sides of the aisle here. It was almost it was odd in a way to see the reaction from the congressional members, where the whole gun violence issue and the political rhetoric that's been going on really hit home, and I got to think that the public's saying, where were you before with all these other tragedies? But regardless of that, they're taking notice now. If the rhetoric is toned down, that would be good for democracy. The question I think you have to ask is if, at least for the short term, have we gone too far already?
All right. Well, that is where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much, and please rest up for the final burst of action. Mike Gormley of Newsday and Matt Hamilton from the Times Union. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
State lawmakers aren't up for re-election until next year, but a number of them are seeking other jobs this fall. One, for example, is Staten Island Assemblywoman Nicole Malliotakis. She announced earlier this year that she would be running for New York City mayor. If she can get past the Republican primary, she would face off against the heavy favorite, current mayor Bill de Blasio. Our Karen DeWitt sat down with the legislator outside the Capitol earlier this week to discuss why she's taking on such a tall task.
Assemblywoman Malliotakis, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
In addition to being an assembly member, for how many terms have you been in the assembly?
This is my fourth term.
Fourth term assembly member. You're also running for mayor of New York as a Republican. And in a Democratic-dominated New York City, that's a real long shot. So why are you doing this?
Well, look, I think New Yorkers have shown in the past that they're willing to cross the line and vote for a Republican. They've done it for, you know, 20 years of a Republican before Mayor de Blasio came in. If it's the right person, if they're proposing the right ideas, and if they're unhappy with the direction that the city is. And I'm running really because there's been a deterioration in the quality of life across the city of New York, whether it be the rising homeless crisis, whether it be schools that are failing, that it continues to just pump more money in but not get any results, whether it be the transportation options that are lacking, our transit system that is a complete disaster, and the traffic that has gotten worse each year under this mayor. These are the basic issues that I think that our city wants addressed. And certainly those are the complaints that I've been getting from people across New York City, that while he's off fighting a national ideological war, these important issues that are the basic responsibilities of city government are falling by the wayside, leading to a deterioration of everyday quality of life.
But before you even have a chance to run against Mayor de Blasio, you're in a primary, right? With Paul Massey, who I think is a real estate developer.
Yes.
So what do you have to offer that he doesn't? Why challenge him?
Well, first of all, he has raised a lot of money, and certainly financially I'm at a disadvantage, but we got into the race a little later than the other candidates and I jumped in because I didn't see anyone really holding Mayor de Blasio accountable. We weren't seeing any good ideas or proposals coming from Paul Massey. He's somebody who has maxed out in donations to Bill de Blasio. He is someone who just moved to New York City from Larchmont, Westchester, a little over a year ago. And so I think that these are things that are not representative of what who our mayor should be, especially the nominee for the Republican Party.
Yeah. President Trump, got to ask you about him since you're a Republican. Trump's a Republican. Are you a supporter?
Well, Marco Rubio is my candidate for president. I was a state director for his campaign. That is who I had endorsed. I believe that.
But did you?
At the end of the day, I voted for him, but I believe that The issue is people should be looking at me for what I'm offering and what I'm suggesting and what I'm proposing and what I stand for, not for what anyone else in my party does. And I think that people in New York tend to vote for the person many times, especially in big races like this, where there's a lot of media attention and they have the ability to get their ideas to the forefront through the press. And so, you know, that's my, I'm really happy with what I, the race that I've been running and the ideas that I've been putting forth and talking about the critical quality of life issues that have been, have gone to the wayside under Mayor de Blasio.
Is there anything, President Trump's policies that you disagree with? For instance, his budget, if it were enacted, mm-hmm. it would just blow multi-billion dollar holes yeah. in the New York City and New York State budgets.
Well, of course there's things I disagree with, but I think that I would be in the best position as
Can
another
you name
Republican.
Any?
Well, I mean, you mentioned, you know, the budget, some of his policies internationally. What I'd really like to see is a mayor that, a president that goes forward with streamlining the immigration process, and I'm hoping that that's what's going to happen, because we have seen 30 years of individuals saying we got to fix the broken system so people don't have to wait so long to become citizens, and no one wants to touch it because Republicans are afraid of being primaried from the right, Democrats are being afraid of being primaried from the left,
yeah.
and so no one's wanted to address this issue that affects so many New Yorkers. Certainly when it comes to issues of taxation, the idea that Washington is looking to take away our deductions when it comes to property taxes or income taxes is problematic. And I think as another Republican, I would be able to negotiate with the Republicans in Washington and explain how their policies are affecting the city of New York. You know, this mayor has shown an inability to work with both the president as well as the Democratic governor from his own party. I can have the ability to negotiate and work with them and in a respectful way make them understand how some of the policies that they're putting forth could be hurting the people of our city.
So you think they'd listen to you more?
Well, I think I'm somebody who can certainly negotiate better with them and explain better, because our mayor Shoney has an inability to get along with either the Republicans or the Democrats.
Okay, some issues going on in New York City. One of them that you mentioned, mass transit, the MTA. It just seems like there's this transit system meltdown. What is going on there? Who do you blame, and how do you fix it?
Well, I think it's been years in the making, this problem. There's been mega projects that have been underway for decades that are tremendously over budget. They're over schedule. For example, the Long Island East Side Access Project that comes to Manhattan is 13 years over schedule now. It's $6 billion over budget. And I blame, you know, all the parties that oversee the MTA have responsibility. Yes, the governor has the majority of the board members on the MTA board. However, the mayor has four appointees, and his appointees are not standing up against the status quo. They're not calling for investigations into this tremendous amount of mismanagement that we're seeing that's leading to these project overruns. Certainly, as the mayor who has the entire New York City subway system right there in his city, his jurisdiction, he should be making more noise and using his ability as mayor, both with the board members that he has on the MTA board, as well as his ability to put money and make commitments toward a capital project to try to get upgrades to our subway system. The signals that the subway system relies on tremendously and is responsible for the majority of the delays that mm-hmm. we're seeing are completely outdated. They are pre-World War II. They are decades beyond their lifespan. This is something that cities across the world, Vancouver, San Francisco, London, Paris, all investing in their subway system. We're not doing that here in New York City. And as mayor, you know, I would certainly make more of a commitment. We've seen this mayor spend a tremendous amount of money. He's increased spending by nearly a quarter in the 3.5 years he's been there. However, we're not seeing him making those vital investments in long-term infrastructure, planning for the growth of our city, both economic and population. And that's the thing that I would be focusing on, is long-term, how do we correct these problems that we're facing and deal with upgrading a subway system that is falling apart. 70,000 delays a month now compared to 28,000 delays in 2012. It's becoming a crisis situation.
Another major issue for New York City also happens to be the biggest issue for the end of the legislative session, and that's mayoral control.
the ability of the New York City mayor to have control over the public schools. Should it be renewed if you were to become mayor? Would that be a useful tool for you?
Well, I believe it should be renewed. My issue is it shouldn't be a blanket renewal, and that's what we've been seeing come forward in the assembly. It needs to be, there needs to be some parameters that are added to it, whether it be ensuring that our chancellors are educators. We have not always seen that in the past. Giving the Community Education Council more ability to review the public, the budget, making it more transparent. We give the city a tremendous amount of money, $9 billion in spending for schools, yet when it gets to the classroom, we don't see where it's going. They have a requirement to give us a report on how they're spending the money, and they haven't been complying with that. I also believe that per capita, per city, we're spending more per pupil than any other city in the nation. And that goes, same thing for the state, but
the money's
not getting to the classroom. We're seeing a lot of money, billions being spent on contracts, on consultants. There is a tremendous amount of bureaucracy at the top level at the Department of Education, nearly 2,000 employees. And the money's not trickling down to the classroom. We have teachers that are paying for their own supplies. We have students that don't have the most modern and up-to-date textbooks. We have schools that don't have computer labs. We have children that are being taught in trailers. So there's a tremendous amount of questioning on how this mayor is actually managing the education system. With failing schools, he's pumped hundreds of millions of dollars into what he calls a renewal schools program, but we're not seeing nearly the results that we should be. In fact, that is a perfect example of where the money is going to these high-priced consultants, and it's not actually getting the students the services that they need, and so that needs to be revamped. And there was actually a call earlier this year by me and others that we should be investigating the way that they're spending money in that renewal schools program and why a lot of the money is being wasted.
The Senate Republicans have bills out that would renew mayoral control but tie it to various ways to strengthen charter schools. Is that something that you support? Do you think that's a good linkage?
I think we need to support charter schools. We need to support private schools. I think at the end of the day, our public schools are extremely overcrowded. And if we don't allow private schools and charter schools to exist and survive and they close, then those students are being absorbed by the public school system and we can't, quite frankly, accommodate them. And so that needs to be addressed where everyone can coexist. I have certain restrictions. I don't necessarily like charter schools being co-located with public schools, especially if it's gonna have an effect on the students that are there in terms of overcrowding or their lunch hour, for instance, or
the accusation is sometimes the charter school space is better than the public
schools.
So
it's got to be
building.
There needs to be some level playing field. Certainly, the charter schools need to comply with the same rules that the public schools have to comply with. If students are enrolled for a charter school, and that school student leaves, they have to return the money. But we need to create a situation where all our schools can survive and thrive, because again, we have a very overpopulated, overcrowded public school system.
Now, in the assembly, you're Republican, you're in the minority in a chamber that's really dominated by Democrats. I have to say, you're not the only assembly Republican this year that's seeking a new job. For instance, Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin wants to be Rensselaer County Executive. Is it something about being Assembly Republican that's difficult that you guys want to get out?
I think you see a lot of Democrats also running for, like, New York City Council, for instance. I believe that, you know, I've been somebody who has looked to reform the system since I've gotten here. I was one of the first individuals to call for Shelley Silver to resign.
Mm-hmm. Former Assembly Speaker, now facing prison time for corruption charges.
Yes, and it was even before Preet went after him. It was actually when he was using taxpayer money to silence victims of sexual harassment. I've stood up against the governor when it came to tolls and fares in my community. I've stood up against the MTA when it came to service cuts, and we restored those service cuts. And so I've spent a lot of time advocating, and unfortunately, when you're in the minority, you're spending more time fighting against everything, trying to stop bad things from happening, than actually pushing your own agenda. So this would give me an opportunity to have the ability to be able to push my own agenda to help make New York City better. And I do believe that there are a lot of quality of life issues that my constituents in Staten Island and Brooklyn are very upset about, and traveling around the city, other communities have the same concerns about traffic, about transportation, about the homeless crisis, about quality of life crimes not being targeted anymore. These are all issues that I believe need to be addressed in the city of New York, and that's why I'm seeking an office that will give me the ability to address those issues.
The governor has been largely absent from the state capitol since the budget passed in early April, and it got us thinking, are you satisfied with the amount of time Governor Cuomo spends in Albany? Let us know by logging on to our website, nynow.org. Last week, we asked you how damaging was former FBI Director James Comey's testimony toward Donald Trump, and 61% said very, 15% somewhat, and 24% said not really. Frank in the capital city voted very damaging, saying Trump is a moral black hole sucking in everything and everyone around him. Pat in Rockland County disagrees. The testimony just proved that Comey is part of the shadow government and did all that he could to make President Trump look bad. And Gary in Brooklyn told us the incident shows the importance of documenting workplace problems, whether they occur in a typical office or in the Oval Office. Thank you to Gary, Pat, Frank, and everyone who took the time to vote. We hope to hear from you again. The website address is nynow.org. While on the site, you can stream any of our past programs and follow links to us on social media, including Twitter, where our handle is @nynow_PBS. You'll find a link to the Capital Confidential blog as well. It's also at timesunion.com. All right, Casey, next week, Barb Bartoletti of the League of Women Voters will be on our program. Karen DeWitt will be sitting down with her. This is her last legislative session. She's been here a long time.
Her exit interview. She's always full of fire and determination, I think. Of course, the most pressing question is, after decades of doing this kind of work down at the Capitol, does she feel that her advocacy has made enough of a difference? Mm-hmm. I think I know what the answer is going to be, but it'll be interesting to hear how she puts it.
One of our go-to people whenever we have questions about ethics or anything along those lines.
Yeah, fierce, without a doubt. Well, we leave you today with shots from atop Spruce Mountain in the Adirondack Park. I'm Casey Seiler.
A nice fire tower up there greets you at the top. I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.